You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 411, here to talk about Notre Dame's victory over Boston College. Randall's here as well. Randall?
Hey, it was a good win this weekend.
So we are going to talk about kind of the reaction a little bit from fans, and people seem that Notre Dame can do nothing right, even if you win by nearly 30 points, 49-20. Brian Kelly and the coaching staff is just awful and can do no right. So we want to discuss that. And we'll go through the different position groups as well. And Randall, do you have the winner of our pound of coffee?
No, I don't.
Okay. We'll have that for you guys at the end of the episode. And like always, we will then tweet that out to the winner. How we do it is we send a promo code that gives you a free pound of coffee when you check out at mainstreetroasters.com. And you don't need a promo code to check out there. You can go there and order your own coffee for some great tasting, fresh roasted coffee here in Northern Indiana. Okay, so let's start with the offense. And on each position group, Randall, I did want to talk about things you're concerned about or things that you're not concerned about. And so let's start with the offensive line.
Well, here's the thing. Notre Dame, bro, it seemed like it was a slow, like it started out bad. And I think they were kind of in a hangover from last week. They had to get the Georgia out of their mouth. And I kind of wondered, watching that first part, I kind of wondered if this was kind of, they were looking past Boston College, maybe. They expected to go in and have this an easy one, just a combination of different things. Boston College is terrible.
You have Michigan State coming up next week.
And so it started out kind of bad. But I honestly never worried about it. I think this is the most comfortable I've ever felt about Notre Dame, you know, starting like that, or a game. The research I'd done with Boston College, I just figured like they were going to pull it. Not by 29 points.
I agree with you. At halftime, I wasn't worried. I was disappointed, but I expect Notre Dame to pull away and win by 10 points when it was all said and done. Yeah. That would be disappointing, but I still wasn't expecting a loss. But I also wasn't expecting what ended up happening, an explosion in the second half, outscoring Boston College, I think it was 35-10. Or is my math right on that?
No. The second half was 35-10. And it was even halfway through the third quarter before they started pulling away.
It was, but I felt like what stopped them was user error. The fumble, Brandon Wimbush pulling the ball out from Josh Adams there. I mean, that was just, it was an unforced, stupid turnover.
Yeah. You're saying that started what?
I'm saying I had felt like when they came out of the second half, they were already starting. I thought they were moving the ball with more efficiency, being more effective, and then just a dumb play like that was a little hiccup.
Yeah. Well, what we've seen from them, especially on defense, is that they make good halftime adjustments. So I was. It was a little amusing to read some of the tweets and.
Okay, because you tweeted
especially
out
on Twitter.
Yeah, you tweeted out from the Irish Sports.
Maybe I was getting a little
just chill out, everyone. I didn't see what you were reading then because I didn't see fans freaking out that much.
What was my? I probably followed wrong. What was it about? Oh, they stopped. They had been giving. It was that one drive where Notre Dame gave up a lot of yards. The defense gave up a lot of yards. And then they stopped them, and they had to. I think they punted.
It was probably after I tweeted out, "Oh, the ghost of Brian Van Gorder still lives," because there were so many missed tackles.
It was all the way down
on
the field, but then they held them. Mm-hmm. They bent, but they didn't break. And part of the thing I've actually discovered is that Mike Elko, his defense his defenses do give up yards. And I think just kind of looking, I did, you know, when we hired Mike Elko, who is great defense, whatever, you kind of expect him not to give up yards. But he has, even against, well, we talked about in the Temple preview last year in their bowl game, Temple had 400-some yards against Wake Forest.
And most of it was passing. It wasn't a whole lot of rushing.
Yeah, but they had a lot of yards. Well, but even, because they forced turnover, the type of defense that they play is dependent on turnovers. And they obviously stopped them when they needed to.
And they are forcing punts, however.
Yeah. So it is a little more, I think the hype around Elko is you don't expect him to give up any yards.
Yeah, but the reason I tweeted that out was because of the missed tackles, not because
there was yards being given out. I thought somebody else, that was just a tweet, and then I was like, oh yeah, I think Ruben did. Which, it was a good, it seemed like some of the stuff that was happening was kind of like that. The linebackers were having a hard time tackling. It did kind of give a glimpse of...
It also shows how far Notre Dame's defense has come.
Well, yeah.
Because that was just any given drive on Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the defensive numbers, how they've improved. I mean, they're giving up less than 20 points again. I think they're like 18.7 yards per play or less. Third downs, they're only letting opposing teams convert like 25% of their third downs. And so there's a lot of... It just seems weird that Notre Dame actually broke a lot of records in this game.
Mm-hmm.
But especially on the offense. I mean,
okay.
Do you want to look at that now, or do you want to go through the position? Add some numbers.
Let's do bigger picture stuff, then we'll go through the positions.
Okay. Well, just some numbers to think about. The last time any one player has had more than 150 yards against rushing yards against BC was in 2014. Boston College has been very good against the run. I think last year they were 7th in the nation. This year they're obviously not at that level, but this has been a good rush defense. And then you look at Notre Dame records. Notre Dame rushed for 515 yards, and that is the most since they rushed for 597 against Navy in 1969. And on that same day was the most yards by a quarterback. Bell Eder had 146 yards on that day against Navy, 1969. Brandon Wimbush had, was it 207? 207. I got it right. So he demolished that record. And then having two 200 yards in the same yard rushers in the same game was the first time for Notre Dame. And that to me is just crazy, because we know that's all they used to do is run the ball. And so you look at the quarterbacks Notre Dame has had, the running backs, they put up some impressive numbers. And they averaged 10.1 rushing yards per carry. So they broke that record. They say the modern era, which Michael Birch tweeted out, the modern era means any game since World War II.
Oh, okay.
The last time they the record was 10 yards per rush, and that was in 1942 versus Great Lakes. So, if you're a Great Lakes fan, football team.
Not that I've.
But anyways, obviously it wasn't against a Boston College even. So, it's just phenomenal what they did on the ground, running the ball, and you know what it comes back to. The big concern is passing the ball. I mean, we saw in a team like Georgia comes in where the whole front seven is insane. They can slow down the run, and then Notre Dame is up a creek. So they've got to figure out that passing situation, or these rushing numbers aren't going to matter that much. And I think that's why most people are concerned, is because there is almost no passing offense.
So let's talk about that then. Let's talk about things you're concerned about with the passing game, and then we'll talk about specifics too about Brandon Wimbush and maybe the receivers too. But the concern for me, I think there's a lot of blame to go around. We were talking about in the forums. I think you can blame the offensive line. I think you can blame the receivers, the quarterback, the tight ends, the ball catchers, at least from the receivers and tight ends, have had issues catching the football. Brandon Wimbush, however, has had issues being accurate. And Brian Kelly has addressed this, too. I think he somewhat tried to not put pressure on Brandon by saying, well, guys, the receivers have to step up and make it easier for Brandon by making tough catches. So I think the running game has is obviously doing very well. Sure, struggled against Georgia mightily, but I'd like to see a team that doesn't struggle running the ball against Georgia. So as far as the passing game, the concern is, as far as the offense as a whole, it's clearly the passing game. But the reason I'm not too worried about it is because I think the biggest factor comes back to Brandon Wimbush. And with more experience, I'm convinced he's going to get better. He's going to be able to get through his progressions more cleanly, more quickly. And the accuracy issue, we've never even heard of an accuracy issue in all of camp, in the spring or in the fall. I think this is just a lack of experience. And I think once he gets more comfortable, more confident, that accuracy issue is going to go away.
Yeah. And I think you can also add some of the play calling in there, too. I mean, I think they need to get some better, which Brian Kelly mentioned as well, they need to get some plays in there that Brandon is comfortable with and, has a high percentage, which you'd think that's like short passes over the middle, I mean, just midfield, and they haven't been able to get open.
Well, but some quarterbacks struggle with the short passing game.
Yeah.
Brian Kelly did say his most beautiful pass, probably, if not the most beautiful pass, then at least one of the top three passes, was the pass to Jerm Smythe. It was a corner route later in the game. And Brian Kelly said that is a passing route that he's very comfortable with, that he likes.
And it's not that he has had issues before. I mean, in high school, he was a 70-some percent passer.
Yeah.
So
he just needs to learn to love all the different passing routes.
Brian Kelly, you know, he mentioned that he's going through his, I mean, he's reading things too fast. Like he needs to let the game slow down for him. And while he is playing too fast and stuff isn't connecting right away, like he moves on before, you know, he's even a little late on some of the calls, getting stuff set up for the guys, and he's just got to relax with it. And some of that, I think, comes back to getting hit as much as he has.
He's gotten hit a ton.
He's scared.
Okay, well, that concerns me, how much he's getting hit, and a lot of that is play calling. He's running a lot.
Well, he's getting
hit unnecessarily.
The biggest thing I'm worried about is that he's too comfortable with the run. And so he's more apt to take off and run instead of waiting for the passer, for the wide receivers to get open. And he doesn't step up into the pocket. You can tell that he's worried about the guys coming around the edge, because instead of stepping up into the pocket, he takes off or does something that he shouldn't. That's when he's fumbled. That's how the game ended against Georgia. And so he can't see that, and he obviously doesn't trust his tackles. Either one.
Exactly. And I think once he gets the experience and has confidence, and part of that is just being able to trust the offensive line to do their job, then I think a lot of the passing problems are going to go away.
Yeah. And so I think it's small adjustments in each, you know, quarterback, wide receiver, offensive line, coaches, tight end. It just takes small adjustments. It's not like something major has to happen. But I do think that this is kind of showing us, you know, the offense, I think it was a little overhyped. We expected better, because last year, I know I said it last year, that they covered up. The defense was so bad. People were so focused on the defense, how bad it was, that we didn't notice some of the flaws on the offense. I remember talking about it last
year. Yeah, you were critical of the offense when that was the only thing that was giving Notre Dame a shot at winning games.
Well, I know. It was the best part of the team, but to go to that next level, there was a lot of things that needed to be fixed. And so some of this is, you know, our focus is off the defense now. And so we can see some of these flaws. And they're worse than last year. We don't have an NFL quarterback. I mean, at this point. I'm not saying he's not going to be, but at this point, you know, Kizer left the NFL and he's starting for the Browns unless he has a migraine.
Is he still starting? He had I saw he had three interceptions on Sunday.
Well, he was. They actually took him out because he was struggling with a migraine. So I don't know if they gave him a bunch of meds and he went back in, but I'm not sure if I've heard of a quarterback coming out because of migraines before. So I don't know if he tried to play and it just wasn't. I don't know. I didn't watch the game. But anyways,
one thing that I do that does annoy me about Notre Dame fans is how it's fine to be critical. However, if Notre Dame, we don't hear anything about this running attack is just amazing. What we hear about the running attack, Randall, is why isn't Dexter Williams getting more carries? Well, we've been running for an average of, what, probably 250 yards the last 3 weeks? I mean, obviously, Georgia really took that number down.
It's more than that. It's more than that.
But it was 400, and then it was under 100.
We have 902 games.
Yards.
Yeah.
But,
let's say 1,000, so it's three. It's over 300. It's close.
I
think it's 300-some. But I know exactly what you mean. And that's what I'm saying is the focus is now off the defense, and so
we're nitpicking on the offense.
There are issues, yes. Bigger issues than we had last year. But luckily, we get to play Boston College. We get to play Michigan State next week. We get to play Miami of Ohio the week after that. And so there's time to work out some of the kinks.
Even with all the complaining, the one thing that we haven't heard is this run to pass ratio. There hasn't been any talk about that. Even against Georgia, Notre Dame was heavy, heavy on the run.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. What I realized even more after this game was that it is going to be hard for Brian Kelly to gain back the confidence of a lot of fans. Do you think there's any coming back from that?
Not for some, because I even felt like even before last year, I thought there was critics of him that just didn't think he could turn it around or could elevate Notre Dame to a playoff level even before last year.
As bad as this offense is,
and he definitely lost more people last year.
Here's what I thought: as bad as this offense is, do you remember our offense in 2012 when we went to the national championship game? We were scoring 12 points, 15 points. What was it, average 13?
The average was more than that because there was a couple of games where Notre Dame scored against Miami. They scored 40.
Yeah, but it was bad.
It was a low scoring game. I have it right here. The average was under 26 points per game.
Was it that high then? But it just seemed like it was. So, yeah.
Let's talk about the different position groups. Offensive line, I didn't look at this as closely, but were we still seeing an even swap with Hainsey? And all I can think of is Brock Wright, not Brock Wright.
Tommy Wright Kramer.
And Kramer, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you notice anything from those two?
They still got beat a couple times, but all the offensive linemen did. So I'm surprised they don't get more help. Like, that's one that you see tight ends line up on that side, but usually they're off. As soon as the ball's snapped, they're running down the field. It helped. One thing that helped is Landry, Boston College, amazing defensive end, that they take him off the field for a lot of plays. It makes no sense. He's
the one that Brandon Wimbush made look like a fool, right? When he ran for the one score.
Yeah, he did do that, yes.
Brian Kelly did say that they were watching for him, and they had extra help. Depending where he lined up, they had an extra help with either tight end or running back.
Yeah.
And they told the tackles just to protect against the speed rush, and then the backup, running back or tight end, would help with the secondary move. Yeah. So Notre Dame was definitely game planning for him. But I don't know either how many times did they take him off the field?
It was quite a bit in the first half. They supposedly want to keep him fresh for the fourth quarter, which why does it matter if you're behind by then? Well, but I remember he would come in on third down, on situational. He'd be in there on third downs, but they would take him off for second play of the draft.
Maybe he had an injury in the off season and he's not back.
Well, that's what AJ had talked about when we did the interview with him last week. AJ covers Boston College. He said he doesn't understand. They don't know if he does have some kind of injury. It makes no sense to them. And he was pretty frustrated about it during the game as well. So that definitely helped. But the best I saw was when McGlinchey and Nelson, they took him to the ground. McGlinchey knocked him down. And he started getting back up. Nelson was right there and knocked him down again. So they totally dominated him on that one. So they definitely did their job. But even with Wimbush, you know, there was a time when he did kind of get around him. But back to the offensive line, I was surprised. Nelson had false starts in this game. So that was kind of surprising coming from him.
But, okay, we're doing like, what are you concerned or what are you concerned about or not? I'm still not too concerned about the offensive line. They're not the best in the country, I don't think. But I think they're very solid and good enough for Notre Dame clearly to have major success running the football. And I think
they can wear down a team.
I think it's Boston College that is what they did. They were able to keep on bringing it, and Brian Kelly in the halftime speech told the offensive line, "Hey, we're looking for you guys to step up and ride you guys for the win," and they clearly did. They clearly stepped up.
Yeah.
All right, running backs.
One more thing with the offense. They did get on the goal line when Brandon Wimbush took him for a touchdown. They definitely got the push there and got the touchdown. They did it on the first try. Everybody knew what was going to happen, and it worked, so...
You're right. That was really good to see.
Yeah.
Running game. So Josh Adams only carried for 18 times, but did average 12.7 yards per carry, totaled for 229 yards, did not get a touchdown, and Reggie Brooks was quite critical of Josh Adams not finishing off his runs and getting the touchdowns. Josh Adams, yeah, he isn't the fastest guy, and...
He's lost a little bit of speed since last year.
Well, I think it's because he's bulked up a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't look at him as the home run threat that maybe he was as a freshman. But I think he is super consistent. He runs hard. I mean,
well, Brian Kelly mentioned that.
He just runs hard.
He kind of got away from that against Georgia, and he was back to running hard in this game. And he did breaking tackles, and we saw it again a couple times where it looks like he's going to fall or lose balance, but somehow he keeps his balance and keeps going for big gains.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing that with 9 guys in the box. I mean, everybody was down the line, and he was still able to do that. So that's where his speed in the second level comes in. If he can get through that first level, you know, they got everybody there, he's good to go.
Okay, we're often critical of Notre Dame and missed tackles, but how many times in one-on-one tackling has Josh Adams just broke tackles? I mean, when there's 2 guys, he usually goes down, but if it's 1 guy, he often is able to break that tackle.
Yeah.
We didn't see Dexter Williams a whole lot, but he did still end up with 6 carries, 50 yards, and 2 scores, and most of those were in the final quarter. So... were you surprised that they still waited this long to bring in some of the backups, and McIntosh also carried 4 times for 4 yards?
24 yards.
I mean, 24 yards.
Yeah, I was surprised. But they did stick with Josh Adams. I mean, it seemed like he had a lot more carries, but it was 18 carries, so they obviously got that number one back.
It did seem like a lot more.
But it seemed like if you would just told me, 18 does not sound like...
I think it's because he was out there for a ton of snaps.
Yeah.
So,
you know, they are going with the guy. It's not as lopsided as what you might think. But Dexter Williams obviously took advantage of his plays. Here's where we'll rant a little bit about the announcers. Dexter Williams, remember he was in, was it the second or third drive, and he just got stuffed for no gain. And then later when he came in and had a big carry, the announcer was like, oh, he's in here for the first time. which wouldn't have been bad, but some of the stuff they said throughout the game.
Yeah, I couldn't hear everything they said.
Absolutely horrible. It was one of the most unprepared announcing crews. According to them, Drew Tranquil is a walk-on that earned his spot on the team and has become a captain.
Just because he's a white guy doesn't mean he's a walk-on.
And there was other stuff. It was absolutely horrible.
Who do they even confuse him with Joe Schmidt or with Chris Finke?
Probably Chris Finke.
But he's not a captain. At least Schmidt was a captain.
I don't know. They were very... It was bad.
Wow. Tony Jones Jr. also carried a couple of times for 5 yards and one touchdown, and then he did suffer a sprained ankle, but Brian Kelly said in the Sun, or maybe it was the post-game interview, nothing's broken, but a sprain. Probably, I kind of doubt we'll see him against Michigan State, just a hunch.
He was in a boot, crutches, so... I did notice when Tony Jones was in, the first couple times when he was a primary running back, they didn't go either. Brandon Wimbush kept it or they tried to pass it. So it almost seemed like you could tell if Josh Adams wasn't the guy in there that they were going to do something else. But then later in the game, he did run. But that was one thing I did notice. There was two plays earlier in the game where they did that. Dexter was also, we'll just mention now, was on special teams, forced that fumble. And so when he comes in there, he's taking advantage of every chance he gets. He's not sulking on the bench because he's not getting more carries or playing time, but he's taking advantage of the chances he gets, and it obviously showed him. He also scored 2 touchdowns.
If he keeps on working hard, he might not get a whole lot of snaps or carries this year, but next year, I mean, I kind of assume Josh Adams is going to be moving on after this season. He's going to get his opportunities next year to get a lot of touches.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Okay, you want to move on to wide receivers?
Yeah, well, there's not a lot of stats to look at with the wide receivers.
Okay, Chase Claypool got the start, and he was out there for a ton of snaps. Then later we learned that Freddie Canteen, it's so funny, Brian Kelly was asked, I think it was in the Sunday teleconference, if there was any injuries coming out of the Boston College game, and they were talking about, I think, Tony Jones, and he mentioned, I mean, nothing serious, I mean, Tony Jones, but other than that, I don't think there's anything. Then a little bit later, I don't know if it was Eric Hansen or who it was, asked him about if they're going to keep the rotation at the wide receiver group or with Chase being the starter, how is Freddie Canteen going to work his way?
Well, Freddie Canteen, they announced before the game that he was in. Cam Smith is... Well, go ahead.
Am I getting the names mixed up?
Well, he mentioned both of them.
Okay. Well, Freddie Canteen is the one that has the torn
labrum. Yeah.
And he'll be out for the rest of the year. Did they mention that before?
Well, he had mentioned it on Thursday's press conference, but we didn't know how serious it was.
Okay, maybe he assumed everyone wasn't going to play. I knew he wasn't going to play, but
yeah.
I just assumed it was just nicked up a little bit. He'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how it sounded then.
I just thought it was funny how he just kind of doesn't mention it until he's pressed on it, and then, oh, yeah, he's out for the rest of the year.
Well, then he also mentioned Cam Smith. He had an ankle sprain, didn't practice much before the game. So that kind of, all of a sudden, we all thought that Chase Claypool was getting a chance, and Claypool and Finke were getting their chance because he had mentioned that it'll be a lot clearer on the receiver rotation after this. Well, obviously it is a lot clearer because Freddie Canteen is out for the year. Cam Smith has an ankle sprain. Javon McKinley, they're playing a redshirt. So right there are three receivers that are taken out of the rotation right now. So, yeah, it definitely made a lot clearer, and it's not because of who they played.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's some indication, but, yeah, there was more to it than that.
The wide receiver group caught 3 passes for 11 yards. Alize Mack did have a big showing, though. We'll talk more about the tight ends then a little bit later.
EQ... he kind of dropped that one, Pat, which it was kind of a bad place. Wimbush kind of, you know, should have seen that he was going to get hit. But he dropped. I thought they were going to call that a fumble.
No. I mean, I
thought he had it.
After the replay, it made me question. But in the moment, it looked like he had just touched it and boom, got hit.
Wasn't sure. But at some point, Brian Killam also mentioned, at some point, these receivers have to catch some of these balls. Even though they're hard to catch, they have to make some of them to help out Brandon Wimbush. I think if they'd catch a couple of these, it would give Brandon more confidence to get the ball. So some of it is on them to make some of these catches.
I agree. Some of it is on the receivers, but I still put most of it on Brandon. And it's something that I think, if I'd have to wish, what's one area where I wish that Notre Dame would be weak at or struggling at right now with the chance to get better the fastest, it would be struggling at quarterback because he has no experience. This is his first year of really playing. Well, and so I think he will get better quickly.
Well, some of the things with the wide receivers, I think I wish I would know more about how their route running is, how they're actually doing the timing and stuff, because some of it seems a little off. And then there was one, rewatching the game, then there was one play right before they called timeout. Brian Kelly actually called a timeout then. But Fink, EQ, and Claypool were all together on one side, and they were talking with each other and kind of moving around. They were totally confused. And then Brian Kelly called the timeout. So right there, they didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. Something happened there. And Matt Freeman had tweeted out a picture of the receivers, which that could, I don't know if that's just calling.
That is a mistake. There's no way you'd write up a play like that.
But they're all the same level. There's two tight ends and two wide receivers, all the same level. Three of them are right in the middle of the field bunched together, and the other one is about 10 yards away, but at the same level in the field. And something's not right with that either. So I think these wide receivers, there is something to it. We thought they were a great group of receivers.
We thought this was one of the deepest positions on the team.
But they're struggling.
Yeah.
So that's why I say it's not all on EQ. These wide receivers have to step up and do something.
It's not all on Brandon.
Michael Young is out there. I think the one pass he got was sailed over his head. But yeah. Oh, the other play was it right before half when they were trying to throw the ball deep? And Wimbush actually had a lot of time. He was running out to his right. And then finally he kind of motioned the receiver to come back, told him where to go, mm-hmm. and then he threw it to Alize Mack. Somebody should have been getting open or something. But even then, Mack had to come back. Something, even that was messed up.
Okay, I agree, but I was watching an NFL game, and it happens in the NFL too, where sometimes guys just don't get open, and you see the quarterback get out of the pocket.
It does happen. It does happen.
It's hard to see on TV if guys are getting open or not.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to really say, oh, clearly Brandon is just not seeing the guys. Guys wide open on every play.
I would say the biggest thing with that situation is a good receiver would have caught on what was happening and maybe changed his route. If there's that rhythm there, a good receiver would have gotten open earlier, would have done something.
Maybe.
But what I'm saying, there is some confusion out there with the wide receivers.
There's problems. I put more.
EQ's getting double teamed, and so it maybe would help if somebody else stepped up. Yeah.
I put more of it on Brandon not seeing the guys quickly enough, or maybe not even quickly, but just anticipating if they're going to be open based off the coverage. Yeah.
He doesn't trust them.
Okay, tight ends. Well, okay, we've been critical of Alize Mack, and he had a really good game.
He stepped
it
up.
Didn't drop a ball, right?
No.
Had 5 catches, 43 yards, had a long of 16, and then Smythe also had a probably Brandon's, one of his 3 nicest passes of the season for 33 yards, a little corner route, caught that in stride.
Smythe also had a really good block on Josh Adams' first long run. The first 65-yard run he had a lot to do with Smythe getting out there and blocking that next guy for him. which let him get that long run. So he had a pretty good game as well. But yeah, definitely impressed with Mac. That's what he needed to do, and I think he helped out as much as he could.
And hopefully, I know he's not a receiver, but almost, but maybe even Alize elevating his game, maybe that can help take some pressure off of EQ or opening something else up for one of the other receivers.
His blocking is a little bit questionable, which those screen passes, none of them work. Everybody, But
there was one good screen play, and it was against Georgia. Other than that, they have not been working.
Well, I don't know whose fault it is, but the one I saw, Mac was on the wrong side. Okay, so there's one receiver blocking, and Mac was on the other side, and the defender was coming up. There's too much confusion there. They're not blocking the right guys. So maybe I think some of it is of how they're blocking. Sometimes the receiver has caught the ball, but then he's got nowhere to go because of the guys blocking in front of him are basically in the way. I saw that last week against Georgia.
Yeah, they've got to get around that. If the guy is blocked, the timing isn't right there.
There's issues there. But anyways, the tight ends Mac stepped up his game.
And then on the quarterback, I do just want to throw this in. Brandon Wimbush has had a lower quarterback rating than the opponent in the first 3 weeks.
Yeah. My biggest worry is that he's a little more Zaire than we had anticipated running. And if he can't run, then maybe he'll pass. But tucking the ball too early and not letting things happen. There's times, I mentioned earlier, there's times where he could step up in the pocket and he didn't. He takes off running. And some of those deep throws are so close, but he just overthrows the guys just enough that they can't catch it. When he fumbled that ball, I think he waited too long to decide to keep it.
Well, yeah, it looked like he changed his mind in the last second.
One thing Reggie Brooks mentioned is that he did the right thing when he made Landry, like you mentioned earlier, like he made Landry miss, look bad on that one play and outran him. He said on that play, he was coming towards the line and making the decision to keep it or to hand it off. And he made the defensive end decide what to do. Most of the time, Wimbush is back there and letting the defense decide what he's going to do instead of making them decide. And so if he's coming down towards them, he can make them make the wrong move and make the right read. And he did it there perfectly, and it worked out great.
And again, I'll just say it again. I know both of us are being critical of Brandon Wimbush. I think this is the one guy that can make the biggest strides through the season. Because I don't think he needs work with his fundamental or the mechanics of throwing the football. I think it's mostly to do with confidence, trusting what he's been coached to do, and just confidence in his offensive line to protect him. And they haven't done it in the first three games, at least not in a big moment in particular. It hasn't happened, but he still needs to trust him.
Yeah. One tweet that I did see that irritated me a little bit was like, it was before his long run. Well, no, it was right after his first long run. It's like, well, now he's going to hold off, or basically they said he'll keep the starting job, and then for now, in parentheses.
Oh, please.
I replied, I was like, do you really think, like, who's going to replace him?
0-3 Ian Book. Ian Book passed.
But that stuff attempts. Like that, just, yeah. I tend to take the side of the underdog sometimes, so. Anyways, that's all I got for him. I think he'll keep getting better. He started three games now, and the schedule is working in his favor. Besides Georgia, the schedule should work in their favor.
I agree. Okay, defensive side of the ball.
We'll throw this in right now. The team that we're all worried about is USC, and they were double overtime.
I don't know if it was double.
Or an overtime against Texas.
They double scored a overtime. Touchdown. Yeah, it was double overtime, yeah.
Against Texas.
Oh, okay. Are you done going on that? Okay, here's the other thing. I was watching the Michigan Air Force game, And with about 5 minutes to go in that game, it was one play from being a one possession game with giving Air Force a chance to win or tie. I mean, it was a close game until the very end, and then Michigan, I think, scored two touchdowns to make it 30-14 or something like that. But it was my point is Notre Dame is not the only team that is struggling in the first half against an opponent that they should defeat, and Notre Dame did defeat them soundly. I'm just saying, even Michigan, who most fans probably think is going to end up in the playoff or very close to the playoff spot, even they were struggling with a team like Air Force.
I don't think they'll be in the playoffs.
Oh, I think they will.
Penn State and Ohio State are too good.
Penn State's overrated. Ohio State already lost.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about the defense.
Well, the defense, we can say, is still doing good things. They did give up some more plays than maybe what we'd hoped for. But we've come to expect a lot from this defense because of how they've been playing. So they did score more than the 3 points I had given them. So I was a little off on that.
They even scored more than what I had given them. I had given them 19 points, and they even scored more than what I had expected they would score. But they had there was that one series in particular where Notre Dame wasn't tackling well, but for the most part they did do a good job of tackling. Again, linebackers accounted for a ton of tackles. Let's start with the defensive line. Tillery had his biggest game statistically, at least for this season. He had seven tackles and a sack. And he won't have numbers like that every week, but he was definitely filling out the stat card.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing I noticed defense line, Julian Okwor.
I know. He's only in there, I think only in there on third downs.
Kind of situational player.
Passing downs, but he forced a fumble. And
he had a huge tackle for loss. And there's a very good player. I mean, this pass rush is a lot better than what we expected.
I expected a lot from Dalen Hayes.
Yeah.
And I expected a little bit from Trimbetti. And I expected Trimbetti to definitely play a lot. But I did not expect Julian Okwara to play as much as he's been playing. And he has been excellent.
Yeah. Which, we have to remember, this was against a Boston College offensive line that
I know, but he was even getting after it against Temple. He was getting after it.
Yeah, yeah.
Brian Kelly did give some praise to Jay Hayes, or I think it was Brian Kelly, really liking what he's been getting out of Jay Hayes.
On the fourth down, Tagovailoa Mosa, he was told he forced that play. He didn't get credited for the tackle, but he forced the player towards the other defenders, and that's a true freshman there on a fourth down, getting done what he needs to get done. So this defensive line is, you know, they got some struggles. They do give up some yards every once in a while and just miss out on some tackles, but they're going to keep getting better.
But if he would have, this is still just such a more sound and just active unit than I think what anyone was expecting.
And one big thing that showed was on that fourth down when Boston College went for it, there was the line, they were all moving around. There seemed to be a lot of confusion. They weren't even set when the ball was snapped, and they still got the stop. I mean, can you imagine that? We saw that a lot with BVD, you know, guys not knowing what they're supposed to be doing, and then give up big plays. But here, guys are always on the ball. And I guess if you look at the total tackles, you know, guys are credited. There's not as many solo tackles, but guys are getting in on tackles. It's not just one guy. Everybody is swarming towards the ball. The linebackers especially, they put up some serious numbers. And it's just good to see the defense do that. Brian Kelly said that it'd be kind of boring to watch their defense in practice because they're just practicing stripping the ball and, you know, just some of the it seems minor, but it's like a major thing. It makes a big difference.
One of the biggest differences I feel like this defense is from last year is that they are finally helping stop the bleeding. So when the offense makes a mistake, they're stepping up. Against Boston College, Wimbush threw the interception at the, towards the end of the half, and there, the time was running out, but there would have been some time, but they came up, stopped stopped Boston College from scoring, and then obviously the fumble on the opening series of the second half, they also came up big then too. And points off turnovers I think are huge, because if you have a turnover and then the other team scores, that can just kill you. Well, against Temple, Notre Dame's defense gave up 0 points off of turnovers, and they only had, I think it was just the one interception, I think. Against Georgia, they also gave up 0 points off of turnovers. And in that one, Notre Dame had several turnovers there. And then against Boston College, Notre Dame gave up 3 points off of turnovers. And on the other hand, Notre Dame scored 21 points off of the forced turnovers that Notre Dame's defense gave them.
Yeah, and that's where you see that's the difference with this Mike Elko. That is the Mike Elko defense right there.
Forcing, but it's not. I mean, yeah, they're forcing the turnovers, and they're also protecting the offense when the offense doesn't hold up.
Yeah.
All right. Was there anything more? Linebackers, they accounted for a ton of tackles in this game.
Coney had 13 tackles. Martini had 10. Niles Morgan had 9. Drew Tranquil had 5. And I would have said that long drive that they gave up, I would have blamed a lot of that on the linebackers on that. Right? It seemed like they were missing.
They were the
a
ones
lot
that were missing the tackles.
But they obviously stepped it up and made a lot of plays as well.
And then cornerbacks.
Well, with the Tranquil, DJ Morgan was actually in there for a little bit at the rover position. So they were getting some depth in there and getting these guys some experience. But I had written down the Tranquil, the walk-on. That's what I had written down about the announcers. So Coney also forced a fumble. But then, of course, BC recovered that one. But he did force a fumble. And, he's playing very well. It's probably Coney and Martini are supposed to be rotating. And between the two, they had 23 tackles. So
it's incredible. And they are both playing well. I mean, Martini's playing very solid as well.
Yeah.
Okay, cornerbacks. Sean Crawford came up big time, had 2 interceptions. Do you think that he'll end up, he's most primarily just been the nickel back at this point when Notre Dame puts out 5 DBs. Do you think that he'll be playing more in more of the 2 cornerback sets?
Yeah, I think he will. I'm trying to figure out how he'll do it, but I think I'd say before the season start that he would get one of those spots by the time the year is done. But he is that. We were worried that he couldn't, you know, with the injuries, it was hard to come back. But he's a difference maker.
He is. The second interception was thrown right to him, but that first one, he robbed Boston College.
And he supposedly looked for the ball. After game, he had told someone that the bench was yelling at him that the ball was coming. And so he turned around and That's what you like to see, guys fighting for the ball. That is not a Notre Dame play. We do not see that at Notre Dame. It was so amazing to see that. I mean, to me, that was the play of the game right there.
Yeah, it was incredible.
But he also had that forced fumble, or recovered the ball. He didn't force the fumble, but he recovered that. But just a guy that's out there, and just...
He was in coverage of one of the touchdown passes.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was.
Yeah.
But it had, yeah, it was he had really good coverage. But I still think it'll be tough to get ahead of either Julian Love or Nick Watkins, because they've played really solid as well, and they've been great in tackling.
Julian Love is the one that gave the touchdown.
Was it Julian Love? Okay.
That's, yeah, because he kind of got behind on that, let the guy get around him, and Love is the one that gave that up. So, you know, it's just hard to see. There's one position where we have three guys. Maybe they'll play and try to get them all on the field. But, I mean, they did a good job in this game. I mean, Crawford was out there a lot, and I definitely want to see more of him.
Yeah, I don't expect we'll see a whole lot of nickel against Michigan State, but I know they are changing things up a little bit as far as they do have a running quarterback.
Yeah,
this year.
The only thing that could change up is if Love does help out at the safety. Like, there's been talk of that before the season. Nick Coleman got banged up a little bit. He did come back in and play.
Yeah, there. I was worried when I saw that because, for one thing, he's been a really solid player, and it's also, it would just be sad to see him go down after he's started to have a really, really good season.
So I guess the one way Crawford get more playing time is if Love helps out more at the safety. But these defensive backs have been playing good.
Yeah.
But they've been doing a good rotation, in my opinion.
Yeah. Sean Crawford, he has been out there quite a bit. Notre Dame, I mean, if you get him in third and long, you'll probably see three receivers out there, so you'll probably have Crawford out there for a couple times a drive, maybe even. Okay. Safeties, we kind of talked about them a little bit. Was there anything more besides Nick Coleman being banged up a little bit?
One thing I noticed stuck out to me was Devin Studstill is making plays up at the line of scrimmage. I mean, he's definitely that safety that'll come up and make plays there at the line of scrimmage. Seemed he had more of an impact there than back further, but he had some good hits. Very impressive.
And he was doing that too in the, I forget now if it was Temple or Georgia, where he had a couple, where he helped end a drive by coming down and stopping a run.
Yeah.
I'm surprised McGlinchey wasn't called for a late hit on the, was it the intercept? I'm thinking it was the interception. I guess the referees, they just don't care about defensive players. All they care about is protecting the offense.
Yeah. Some of the other safeties did get some playing time there at the end. Nico Fertitta had a tackle. Jordan Genmark Heath had a tackle. So some of the younger guys did get a chance to get in the game or the guys that don't get a lot of playing time got a chance to get into the game. ESPN credited Freddie Canteen with a tackle.
I don't see it over here on the stat sheet I'm looking at.
He wasn't even playing. Anyways, I just noticed that just now.
Oh, yeah, he is here. Number 11. It must have been a mistake made by
maybe
the stats people at the stadium. Probably some kind of special teams mix-up.
Yeah.
Speaking of special teams, anything stand out for you?
Jonathan Duer came in and kind of struggled with his kickoffs.
Yeah, well, was it the wind or was he just not get a good connection?
I don't know. The one he kicked that was way short, he looked like they kept the cameras on him and it just looked odd. It was kind of his follow through. I think he's thinking about it too much. And what were they? Two of them were short, way short, and then the one went out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
And was it on one of those, they got a penalty as well, and so they started at the 35-yard line, I believe. And then he was replaced by Justin Yoon at the end.
Honestly, if we're going to win the game, let him kick if it'll help get him ready. But not until we know
that
we're going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, get this. Justin Yoon didn't kick any field goals.
I wish, I mean, he did great against Georgia, but I wish he wouldn't ever have to kick a field goal.
Which, the red zone, we'll throw this in now. Notre Dame is tied for first in red zone offense.
How is that possible, Randall? Our offense is just awful.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not sure how it happened, but they are 15 of 15 in the red zone. 13 but
those must touchdowns. Those must all be field goals, right?
Exactly. No, 13 of them are touchdowns. And Brian Kelly mentioned that a lot of it is because they have that run-first mentality. They're looking for the run in the red zone, and they're getting it. So, but back to the special teams, the return punt returns. What are your thoughts on that? Chris Fink has no chance to ever return the ball.
He always makes the wrong decision.
Fair catch?
Yes, that's my biggest problem with him, is that it's a coin flip if he's going to make the right decision to either call a fair catch or get drilled by the oncoming gunners.
Here's what I'm scared one of those is going to come back to bite him.
Well, I think that's kind of what happened to C.J. Sanders last year, is you're playing with fire, and eventually you get burned.
He would come out of the end zone. Remember that? That was some of it, where he came out of the end zone, then didn't he go back in, knelt down? Remember all the confusion?
Well,
with that?
He also, didn't he just fumble one into the end zone? I think that was a punt, though.
Yeah, well, and there was decision-making with him. I think that's why we don't see more of him, because of decisions he made.
I would like for Chris Fink to catch and run the ball if there's space to run. But
there's never any space to run.
Well, then always call a fair catch. But that's not even true, Randall, because there have been times when he has called a fair catch, and he has a 10-yard cushion.
Not very often. It seems like the coverage, I'm not sure what they did, but it seems like everybody's up on the line, and then they let half the guys get past them, and they're all down there covering Fink before he even gets the ball. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like there's ever even a chance for a return.
I do feel it is really hard to have a lot of success.
Which they've gone up against some good kickers.
And that's the thing. If you have a good kicker, put air underneath it. It makes it really easy for the coverage unit to get in position.
Yeah.
So I'm more concerned about doing the wrong thing, being risky, and potentially fumbling the ball than I am about getting a good return on it.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think the coaches have mentioned that the biggest thing is keeping the ball safe.
And kickoff returns, I feel, it's been so close to CJ being able to break one more tackle and then he'd be gone. I mean, it's been close a few times where it looks like he has a window to get through, and it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
This year. Okay. Do you want to find that winner? Is there anything else besides finding the winner?
No, I don't think so.
All right, Randall, who's our winner for the score prediction for the pound of Main Street coffee?
Joey Yanto. He predicted Notre Dame 45, Boston College 17.
And pretty close. There was a few that were close.
Yeah, there were.
The way we do it is we just add the difference between each of the scores, and whoever has the lowest difference ends up winning.
Yeah.
So, for example, my brother-in-law Eric had predicted a score of Notre Dame 49-10, but Boston College scored 20, so he was off by 10 points.
And maybe we should give him credit for getting the one right. I'm sure he'll have an idea.
Have an opinion on that. Okay, thank you guys for listening. We will be back Wednesday for our previewing Notre Dame at Michigan State primetime matchup on Fox. And at the beginning of the year, I had written this in as an easy Notre Dame win, but the closer it gets, I'm a little more concerned about it. And Rand, let's just throw this in there. I was playing a game with myself called Guessing the Spread for Notre Dame, Michigan State, and I guessed it spot on. What do you think the spread is for Notre Dame at Michigan State?
I had seen it. I think it's 4.5.
Okay, when I looked at it, it was just at 4, and that's where I was expecting it to be at 4. So I think, yeah, I think it's going to be a close game. This team is not in the amount of shambles as I was expecting. I was expecting them to be inside of a burning home, and it's not quite that desolate, not quite that.
Here's something for you to think about. Their quarterback is the leading rusher on the team.
I did hear that.
So take that either way, however you want to, but that's something to think about.
All right, we'll talk more about that coming up on Wednesday, so definitely tune in for that. And until then, go Irish.
Go Irish.